This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've decided to join us. It costs an average of more than $200,000 to raise a child, according to a 2015 Consumer Report. It's all to say that raising babies is no easy feat. Medical bills, childcare, new clothes for a growing child, all of it adds up pretty quickly. But what happens if you don't have enough? In our earlier segment today, we explored poverty's far-reaching impact with Matthew Desmond, who is a Princeton sociology professor. Unfortunately, this is also a reality for many people here in the state of Michigan. In Flint, around 50% of children live in poverty, according to the 2020 census. Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha, who is a renowned pediatrician and whistleblower during the Flint water crisis, observed the overwhelming effects of poverty on people's health up close when treating children at Flint's Hurley Children's Hospital. Recently, Dr. Hanna-Attisha, along with her colleague Luke Schaefer, a University of Michigan professor and director of poverty solutions there, created RX Kids, an initiative beginning in 2024 for many Flint residents. In this program, Flint parents are going to be receiving a cash allowance of $1,500 plus $500 a month for the first year of their child's life. Imagine that, if for the first year of a child's life, there's $500 a month coming in just to help. There are lots of ideas about universal basic income and the kinds of ongoing support that would either greatly reduce or eliminate poverty in our nation. Here's one that is unfolding right here in Michigan. We've got with us today Dr. Hanna-Attisha and Luke Schaefer to talk about this new program and what it will mean for families in Flint. Dr. Hanna-Attisha, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Stephen, it is always lovely to be with you.
Yes, great to have you here. And Professor Luke Schaefer, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Stephen, thanks so much for having us.
Yeah. So, Mona, I'm going to start with you. Tell us about RX Kids, what the program is, how it came about, and who's going to qualify for this.
Yes, I'm so excited to tell you about RX Kids. It is a first in the nation effort to eliminate infant poverty. You know, we know increasingly what it means to be born into and to grow up in poverty. We know it does what it does to developing brains and to really the life course of children. For so long as a pediatrician, I've wished for the ability to prescribe away poverty, to prescribe an antidote to poverty. And that hasn't been possible. I think for many of us, we thought like, oh, we can't fix poverty. Like, there's a lot of problems out there. Like, this is a really hard one to fix. And I'm tired of band-aiding. So much of what we do in healthcare, so much of what we do in society is really band-aiding the consequences of not preventing and poverty. So RX Kids is this crazy, big, huge, never been done before effort to tackle this. We are going to prescribe, like you said, every pregnant mom in Flint an unconditional cash allowance during mid-pregnancy. And then during that first year of life, every baby is going to get a $500 unconditional monthly cash allowance. Like you said, Flint it's the poorest city in our state. Mm-hmm. Our child poverty rate is 3 times state and national averages. And when you look at the youngest kids, and especially in that perinatal period, that's when poverty spikes. So right before a baby's born, mom loses income. They often kind of drops out of the workforce. Babies are expensive, like you said. Our childcare costs are sky high. Parental leave policies are lacking. So the period that families are most poor is actually this kind of prenatal infancy period, which is maddening for me as a pediatrician, because that is the most important time period in a child's development. Your brain actually doubles in size in that first year. So the intervention is aimed, we'd like to do, I mean, we wish we could do this like most countries for all of childhood, but we are narrowing this intervention to this prenatal infancy period, and everybody in Flint qualifies. And that's what makes this different than any other pilot out there. This is a citywide intervention to eliminate poverty.
So, Mona, you and I have talked about the Flint water crisis and its effect on children in Flint in particular several times. I wonder if you can talk just a little about how a program like this, had it been in place before the Flint water crisis, might have made things look different. And I want to say up front, I am not at all suggesting that the things that happened with the water supply in Flint would have been okay under any circumstances. But would they have had a different kind of effect if poverty weren't gripping so many of the kids in that city?
Yeah, I think it would have changed things in two ways. The first is Flint's water crisis is a story of poverty. Because the city was so poor, because we had lost a tax base, because the revenues had decreased, that was one of the reasons we were taken over by financial emergency managers. So our poor city contributed to our loss of democracy, which resulted in the water switch and the crisis that happened. So that's a part of it. This would have buffered that poverty. And then the other way I think I wish we would have had this intervention in place is when you have a nutrient-rich environment for young children, when you have the bandwidth to care for your kids, when you have adequate food to put on the table, when you have enrichments for children, like high quality childcare and books and all these supports, all of those things can mitigate adversity. So, you know, if a kid in Flint is exposed to lead, it's different than a kid in a more affluent community where they have those nutrient-rich resources already in place. So if this intervention was in place, families would have been able to more adequately buffer the impact of the crisis with good nutrition and supports and all these other things. It still was terrible. It doesn't mean, you know, it would have prevented this crisis. But I think, you know, something that we learned from the water crisis is that we failed at prevention. As a society, we failed to protect kids. So much of what we have been doing in our recovery is taking a step back, not thinking about what can, you know, how do we build more resilient children? Like, no, it's not like, you know, I tell my families every day in clinic, like, read more to your kids and sign up for this program and sign up for the Flint Registry and this home visiting program and all these great things, these awesome things we have put into place in Flint. But this program, RX Kids, is about taking a step back and asking ourselves as a society, like, how do we do better to build a resilient community so that kids and families can do what they want to do, which is be great parents and raise children. So this has shifted kind of that locus of focus on how we, you know, fundamentally care for each other. And that is a consequence of the water crisis, but really the consequence of a nation that doesn't do a good job caring for their children.
Yeah. Luke Schaefer of Poverty Solutions at the University of Michigan, I want to bring you into the conversation here and talk about your collaboration in this project. In your organization, of course, you see lots of different ways that poverty affects people, not just here in Michigan, but all over the country. But I want to give you a chance to talk about why a program like this, in your mind, makes so much sense, why this kind of program, cash transfers specifically, are a way to alleviate poverty, and I guess what you think the outcomes will look like from what you're doing in Flint.
Yeah, so Poverty Solutions tries to look across so many different dimensions, housing, workforce, health, income, to really tackle poverty in partnership with communities. But that means we're always looking for the evidence and looking for the things that work. And so I have been studying and thinking about child benefits for many years now. It is, you know, the type of program that Mona is proposing in Flint. It's been tried all over the world. And country after country, when they adopt exactly this type of cash transfer, saying, you know, raising kids is expensive and society has a reason to come alongside parents in that work, child poverty plummets. Canada, the UK, Australia, Germany, all across these places, you see it over and over again. And I was a part of efforts to bring a program like this to the United States. And with many, many legislative champions, that was made possible for 1 year in 2021 with the expanded child tax credit. And you know what we saw again? Child poverty plummeted. Millions of kids lifted out of poverty. Food hardship among families with kids fell to the lowest we've ever recorded. The fraction of families with kids reporting they could, you know, handle a $400 expense, it hit its all-time high. Credit scores went up. I mean, this is the evidence-based policy of evidence-based policies. And I want to be clear that it's different from UBI. It's in the same family as like basic income. But basic income, we're still trying to figure out how would that work out in society when we're bringing everybody in. And this is a great time for thinking about that and experimentation. Child benefits like this, child allowances, they've been tried over and over again. And we see child poverty fall. We see food hardship fall. We see kids and families being less stressed and doing better. So the child tax credit was not extended. And I was thinking about ways to keep this type of policy in the public imagination. We've been talking a lot about the incredible impacts. So when Mona reached out, I couldn't have been more excited. You know, I think this is such an incredibly powerful program that isn't just about cash. It's about sending a message that this is the way that we should care for one another. It's never been tried at a community level. There are all these pilots out there that, you know, pick a few winners, you know, 100 or 200 people in a community. And that's a big part of what attracted to me to this as well, because I think we can study the economic development impacts of, you know, an extra $9 million flowing through the Flint economy every year. So it's an incredible opportunity. I think it's built on this foundation of evidence. And it's a chance for the city of Flint and the state of Michigan to be a leader in saying how we should be caring for our kids.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha of the Michigan State University and with Luke Schaefer of University of Michigan and Poverty Solutions to talk more about RX Kids, which is this new program to provide a cash allowance of $1,500 plus $500 a month for the first year of a child's life for every parent in Flint. We want to get going with you on the phones and on social. Give us a call. Let us know what you think of this effort to eliminate or at least alleviate child poverty in Flint. We were talking earlier with Matthew Desmond, sociologist from Princeton University, about his new book, Poverty by America, the ways in which we ought to be thinking about who is poor and how we alleviate that poverty. We'd love to hear from you about your experiences with poverty, what your ideas are for making more opportunity and less misery for people who live in poverty. 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. This is Detroit Today. I'm 101.9. WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and thanks for joining. Imagine if every person who was going to welcome a new child into their lives got $1,500 plus $500 a month for the first year of that child's life. That is what's going to happen beginning in 2024 in Flint, Michigan, the site several years ago of the Flint water crisis. A new program called RX Kids is going to provide $1,500 cash allowance to families plus $500 a month for the first year of their children's lives. We're talking with the architects of that program, Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha, a pediatrician at Michigan State University. She is known, of course, for bringing attention to the Flint water crisis. Also with us is Luke Schaefer. He's a University of Michigan policy professor and the director of policy or of poverty solutions there at the university. We want to hear from you on the phones and on social as well. 313-577-1019 is the number, and you can go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today to be part of the program. Before we get to listeners, though, I want to talk a little about the money that will sustain this program, how much it costs to do something like this, and how we make sure it's something that continues, that we don't just start and then see fade away. Lots of people who are critical of programs like this point to the cost and sustainability as reasons for their doubt. Mona, talk to me about money here and how it all is going to work.
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's where we're actively working to raise money. So we have received a generous, incredible grant from the C.S. Mott Foundation, which is based in Flint, Michigan. And it's a $15 million grant, which is, wow, amazing, unheard of.
Yes.
Their board unanimously and enthusiastically supported this effort, and they said it's the fastest grant that's ever left their door. And I think that really kind of speaks to their commitment and to the boldness of this idea and the potential outcomes. So that grant is a matching grant. It's a challenge grant. So we have to raise another $15 million to unlock those dollars, and that's what we have been actively working to do. Yesterday, the Michigan Health Endowment Fund joined our family of funders. With the Community Foundation of Greater Flint has joined the Hurley Foundation. We have been talking to foundations across the country who are interested in this really novel work. And we're trying to also leverage support from government. We want a whole village of folks to be behind this work. So we are working with the state. We are working with city government to try to also leverage additional resources. And that is where we see the opportunity for sustainability and scalability. Everything that we have done in Flint has not been about Flint. Everything that we have been doing is about really shining a spotlight on how we can help very similar kids and communities all across this country who don't have the same opportunity as other kids, be it from the Infrastructure Act, which is replacing lead pipes across the country, to our, fruit and vegetable prescription program, which has been part of the U.S. Farm Bill. We have this track record of translating practice into policy to help, once again, kids and communities everywhere. So even before this program is starting, we are trying to figure out how to make this a national program. And maybe I can have kind of Luke jump in here as this policy expert, especially kind of with the child tax credit and different opportunities of how we can make this nationwide.
Yeah, so the part of the building of this towards that first year of life, and even before the first year of life, builds on this evidence that so much that goes on with kids is really shaped in those, at the very beginning. And so that means that it is a possibility of something that we can do that is cheaper, right, as a nation. So if you just put a few numbers into context, we spend about $450 billion on Medicaid every year. That's an efficient program. It's an incredibly important program. To do the child tax credit and to make child poverty plummet to the lowest level ever, that would be to keep that program would be about a quarter of that cost, about $100 billion. So I think that's a pretty good deal. But to do this, right, to sort of surgically focus, especially for families who are on Medicaid. So if we think about the 40% of kids that are born with Medicaid coverage, to do this for the entire nation, so I give you $450 billion for Medicaid, $100 billion for the child tax credit, this would cost something like $12 billion a year. Hmm. to have this safety net for, you know, 40% of all of our kids. So even if we did it for every kid, right, we're still talking about a tiny fraction of the cost. And you can think about all the incredible positive impacts over time. You know, we have new studies that show an extra $1,000 in that first year of life impacts people's earnings in their 30s, right, decades later. So the potential for impact is just incredible. And there are lots of different funding streams that we can think of where states might be able to adopt us for other cities. So maybe it starts in Flint, but we would love, love, love for it to come to Detroit. Or Benton Harbor, or parts of rural Michigan that are really struggling. Or maybe it could be adopted by an entire state. And so this is really about showing a model. I think a model that is, you know, financially a really great deal for states and the nation to really support families in that critical first year of life.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's go to Judy in Detroit. Judy, welcome to the show.
Oh, my goodness. Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me on the program. I don't really need to make a question, but a comment that I think that a lot of people tend to equate democracy with capitalism, and the two are totally different. Yes, we have the freedom to move forward and what is best for us. Honestly, I believe in a Star Trek world, and I know this is never going to happen anytime soon because we need to deal with the problems that are here now. But I would love it if our world governments could come together and just say everybody who is born has a right to live, has a right to health, has a right to all the good things that we're talking about. And then we just go ahead with whatever education can provide us, and we do the best that we can with what we've been provided, as opposed to everyone striking for, if you're wealthier, you get this. If you're not wealthy, you get not this, and you get it overlooked, and politicians and so forth and so on. And it's just a comment, and I'm going to let it go from there.
Yeah, Judy, I love that you called and made that point.
Yeah.
You know, Mona, we have talked before about, you know, there are ways to think about these kinds of efforts as investment in human capital, as opposed to monetary capital. And look, right, we don't have enough time on this show to debate the merits of capitalism versus other economic systems, but I think we can agree that there are different ways to think about that capitalism.
Yep. Yes. Judy's comment was awesome. I'm a Star Trek kid, and I want my kids that I care for to live long and prosper, right?
Yeah, right.
But they can't. My patient, kids I care for in Flint, they literally live less. There is a 20-year difference in life expectancy between a kid I care for and a kid in another part of the county. And that's not okay. And it is programs like this that will hopefully address our ability for every kid to have opportunity and prosperity independent of their environment and the situation that they were born into. So that's what excites me about this, because it is investing in that human capital. And Judy mentioned democracy. And I want to add something about this project. And Stephen, I think you will love this. So we think that this community citywide effort is actually going to build democracy. We think that it will improve trust in a community that has severely lost trust in institutions and government. And we're actually going to measure things like trust and civic engagement and civic participation and voting because of this intervention. We think it will build community and work to restore democracy and faith in institutions and government.
Yeah, yeah. Luke, the examples that we have from other places and other places around the world, really, do suggest that this kind of investment pays off in a way that maybe looks different than your stock portfolio, but there is a return on this investment. I think that's an important point.
That's right. I mean, you know, we sometimes feel like we have no idea what to do, right? Where we get lost in how difficult our challenges are. This is something that has worked over and over and over again in countries all over the world, and it worked right here in the United States. This is something that we can do. This is something that can bring us hope and joy, and it's about the money. But it is also about the message. It is a different way for caring for families. Instead of saying, you're poor, you don't know how to care for your family, we're going to give you some money or we're going to require you to do this or that. This says, we're coming alongside you. We're here with you. We're going to make other things available. But this is really about just supporting you in the work. And that message, I think, has this power to really change narratives.
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha and Luke Schaefer, great to have both of you here to talk about RX Kids. You say you want to start in 2024. That's pretty soon.
Yes.
Building the infrastructure for this seems like it would be pretty daunting too, right?
We're working with an international partner called GiveDirectly, and they are the administrator. We're not reinventing wheels. They do this across the world and across the nation. Mm. So we have a leg up here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, congratulations on the grant to get this started. And we will, of course, be following closely to see what change this makes in the city of Flint. Thanks again for being here.
Yeah. Thank you, Stephen.
Okay. That is going to do it for us this week. Come back on Monday when we will have more great programming for you here on Detroit Today. Also, remember, if you listen to this show and enjoy it and get something out of it, you ought to be sharing it with your friends or your neighbors or your family or whomever, as a way of inviting more people into this community. The discussions we have here are so dependent on you, the listeners, and your participation, not only through the phones and social, but the other ways that we interact. And we want more people to get more out of this by being a part of it. So share the show around. You can do that really easily at WDET.org or on our Detroit Today podcast, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. Detroit Today is produced by Sam Corian and Nick Austin. Technical director and engineer is Matthew Trevethan. And Detroit Today's music is created by Sam Bobian and Will Sessions. We'll talk again on Monday.